The Weekly Connect on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and welcome to The Weekly Connect. This is the programme, if you're blind or partially sighted, you'll want to listen to every single week because we talk about the issues that matter to you and give you the chance to share your thoughts on the week's news, the week's events, and what's going on generally. Now, coming up this week, we are going to be talking about health and well-being. Now, if you're interested in it, then you might find going to a class or group for something like yoga, for example, might be quite difficult if you're blind or partially sighted. Well, our listener Claire has come up with a solution, and it involves your smartphone. Details coming up. We'll also keep you up to date with what's happening this week at RNIB. And if you enjoy a good book, why not try your hand at writing? We hear from blind authors Red Sail and Mark Hardy, who discuss the challenges and joys of writing blind. That's all coming up on this week's The Weekly Connect.
The Weekly Connect.
The Weekly Connect.
On RNIB Connect Radio.
But first, we start this week with a story. The story of John Mitchell. Now, he is a musician, artist and adventurer, and chose to never let losing his sight hold him back. He spoke with Joe Barclay on RNIB Connect Radio's Morning Mix about his experiences. Here's part one.
John Mitchell lost his sight due to a hereditary condition. He started to notice problems with his vision whilst out climbing. John is a keen artist and musician, and he joins me now to tell us his incredible life story. He also tells us why he's decided to leave a legacy to RNIB in his will. John, thank you so much for joining us on the line today. Now, can you start off by telling us a bit about how you started to lose your sight and when you noticed?
Well, it's retinitis pigmentosa, so it had obviously been going over a fair bit of time before I really noticed it. But I was actually climbing out in the Himalayas back in 1986, and we came to the last day of the climb and started in the middle of the night, and I found that everybody else was managing to go up this sort of snowy track quite happily with their head torches on, and I kept on disappearing into the deep snow either side because I couldn't really see where I was going. I thought, well, this is a bit strange. There's obviously something wrong. So got my eyes checked when I came back.
Now, I know you went to the opticians when you came back, like you said, and you got your eyes checked and they decided to send you for further tests. Did you have any clue that this could be retinitis pigmentosa? Because I know your grandmother suffered from the same condition.
That's right, yes. I mean, I'd sort of pretty much gathered by the time it was finally diagnosed that that's what the problem was, so it wasn't exactly the shock it could have been.
Yes, but still, I suppose at the age of 27, 28, you know, you're kind of in the thrust of your life and you're doing all the things that you're kind of wanting to do, and, you know, you've got a career that's in full swing, which we'll talk about in just a second. It must have been still a very trying time for you.
That's right, yes, it's not exactly the best news you can get. I think sort of being prepared helped to a certain extent. It could obviously have been quite a shock if I hadn't been somewhat prepared for it. But yes, I mean, you sort of sit down and think, well, you know, how is this going to affect me over the next, you know, 10, 15, 20 years or so?
Yes, it's one of those things. John, I lost my sight when I was 19 and it happened in the space of 2 weeks and it was very unexpected. So I was kind of thrust into this world of darkness very, very quickly. And for me, it was a case of sink or swim. I was really thrown in at the deep end. But I think, you know, being 19 years old, I had a bit more resilience than I think I would have had maybe if I was losing my sight now, because, you know, you have that kind of stubbornness and belligerence and wanting to kind of prove people wrong. Did you find that people's attitudes towards you changed when you were registered partially sighted?
Not too much. I mean, because I was sort of registered at the time that I stopped working, which was partly the reason I had to stop working, a lot of the people sort of in my friends and all that changed at a similar time, because obviously I lost all the work friends and I sort of got quite a few more new ones locally because I got more involved where I live. I mean, being about 25 miles outside of London where I work, you didn't really see many local people most of the time during the week, so you sort of got a new set of friends at the same time. They didn't really know me before, or at least when I had normal sight, as it were, and the people at work never really saw me once it had got that bad.
Now, As I was saying, when I lost my sight, I was quite a stubborn teenager, and people kept telling me that I couldn't do things, John, which actually made me more determined to prove them wrong. And it wasn't through badness. It was more, I couldn't believe that people said that I wouldn't be able to do things just because my sight had gone. I was quite incredulous when people said that I would never achieve what I wanted to achieve. So that in a way was a good thing for me because it really did spur me on. A lot of people initially thought that I should go away and have a nervous breakdown and then, you know, pick myself up, dust myself off and then deal with it. And I have to say, I didn't really think about my sight loss or deal with it until maybe about 4 years later. And that was due to an incident that happened that suddenly made me realise, uh-oh, I'm not invincible. So, you know, did you go through the kind of depression side of things? Did it really hit you hard at any point at all? Because it took me 4 years before I had my slump.
No, I mean, sort of fingers crossed, things seem to have gone fairly well. I mean, I've actually achieved, I think, far more that I've wanted to achieve since I lost my sight than beforehand, because I haven't had work getting in the way, as it were. So, no, I mean, I sort of did more climbing around the world straight after I was registered blind. I did more music, which I managed to do because I had the time to do it. And eventually I got back into painting again, which is not the sort of thing you'd expect a blind person to start doing. But I sort of got back into that after a few years as well. And I've now managed to get fairly good at that to the point I'm sort of having exhibitions and things like that.
It's just incredible. And let's go on to talk about some of these achievements, John, because as you mentioned, you know, you have continued to climb mountains. You've climbed mountains to raise money for RNIB as well, haven't you? Tell us a bit about that.
That's right, yes. When I first stopped working, I sort of had this grand idea that I would like to go back out to the Himalayas again. I'll give it one more shot and I might as well try and raise some money at the same time. So sort of the grand plan went ahead and I went out there in 1990, did another climb out there, which was successful. And sort of having come back, I thought, well, you know, I managed that one. I could probably do another couple, I should think. And the plan went ahead, along with help from the RNIB with publicity and things like that. And the original intention was to get as far as Everest. But for a couple of reasons, we never actually got that far in the end. In the meantime, I had managed to do another trip to the Himalayas, also climbing out in Alaska and the Andes, where I climbed Aconcagua, which is the highest mountain in the Western Hemisphere. And at the time, that was the unofficial world record for a blind climber.
See, that's just incredible, John. It really, really is. It's just such a pity that that was never made official, that record. Why was that?
It was very strange. I sort of had dealings with the good old Guinness Book of Records, and they didn't really seem to be interested until I got to Everest, which I could never understand. I mean, I've always worked on the basis that, you know, if you're going to break a record, you know, you gradually get higher and higher or faster and faster, depending on what it is you're doing. So I thought it was a bit strange. It was sort of never officially recognised. As far as I was concerned, yes, it was it and it was done. But they really didn't want to know until I'd done Everest, which, of course, unfortunately, I never got to do.
Why was that, John?
Oh, it was a combination that the people that I was climbing with, there was another chap called Norman Croucher, who was a very famous disabled mountaineer. He's a double amputee, and we were both due to go on the same trip, and the long and short of it was they didn't really want two disabled people to cope with when one could be quite enough. So he got to go on the first one, and I was sort of aiming to go on the next one, and unfortunately I got a hernia that got in the way. So by the time that had been sorted out and operated on, and I sort of had quite a bit of trouble with it afterwards, in the end I never actually got that far.
It's such a pity. It really, really is. But, you know, sometimes things happen for a reason. And whether you think that way or not, sometimes you just have to kind of pacify your mind with that kind of thing. Do you think you'll ever go on to climb Everest? Would you like to do it eventually?
I don't think I would these days. I mean, there are now just so many people on there. I mean, there's now so many commercial trips. So you get lots of people up there who really, at the end of the day, don't know exactly what they're doing. There's great queues for the summit if it's a good weather window, but I think these days days I'm quite happy to be away from it.
Well, honestly, I was just talking to my producer earlier, and she has actually climbed Ben Nevis. But I was just saying, the only way you get me to the top of a mountain is by helicopter. I might consider walking down. So I have the utmost admiration for you, because I am just the laziest person. I can't walk up a hill, never mind a mountain. So congratulations to you. Now, talking about some more of your achievements, John, you mentioned your music. How did your love of music come about? You know, what was it that inspired you to create your own studio at home?
Well, I've liked music as far back as I can remember, way back to the start of the Beatles back in the mid-60s. And I started to learn the guitar when I was about 13, something like that. And I've just always loved music ever since. So, I mean, one of the things I really wanted to do back in my youth was sort of get into a band and do something like that, which I never got round to doing in the end. Again, sort of work got in the way of it. And it just sort of started again. I'd been, I suppose, about a year after I'd stopped working, sort of got back into the guitar again, and then sort of met another couple of people, and we sort of started to do a few things together, and then we wanted to do a bit of recording. So I got at the time one of these little four-track cassette recorders and did a bit on that, and then I wanted a bit more sophisticated and went on to a 16-track tape recorder and mixing desks, and it sort of went on from there, really. So I've now got my own 24-track setup at home with all my keyboards and guitars and all sorts of other things, and that sort of keeps me out of mischief.
And there's more coming up from John Mitchell and his interview with Joe Barclay on this hour here on the Weekly Connect. Now, if you're into fitness and well-being, then you might find it interesting to know there are many different apps available on smartphones to help you. Claire Potter got in touch with the RNIB Connect radio programme Tech Talk to share her thoughts of a yoga app.
Hi everyone, my name's Claire, and today I'd like to demonstrate an app called Simply Yoga. It's available for iOS on the App Store, and it is for iPhones, iPads and iPod Touch devices. I would say that this app is by far the most accessible one for people with low vision, very low vision, or no vision at all, and want to do things like yoga, but they can't afford to go out to classes, so they want really clear, nice audio instructions rather than having to look at the screen to know how to do the workouts. So I downloaded this app about a year ago. There are two versions. There's a free version, which gives you just one difficulty of workouts. You just have three ready-made workouts. The paid version is $4.99. I purchased the paid version, and I would say it is the best purchase you could make, because having to pay for an assistant, an actual assistant, to go just to one class would cost you a lot more. So, like I said, this is $4.99 from the App Store, and that gives you the option to have the workouts from the free version, plus you have some level 2 workouts, so you have three more that are slightly more difficult. Because after a bit you can get quite bored of just doing the same workouts over and over again, and once you get bored of those workouts in level 2, in that version you also have the option to create your own workouts, so you can make them even shorter or even longer than what you already have. For example, you might want just poses where you just sitting on the floor, or you might just want standing poses, or just ones where you're laying down on the floor, or you might want just a mixture. So you get all those things in the paid version. So like I said, it is really worth it. $4.99, it is just a one-off price, and you have all those options for, well, forever really. I'll demonstrate this app on my iPad Mini 4. I'm using it with VoiceOver. Like I said, it is very, very accessible. Just the one thing to note, once you select your workout and you press the start button, you just double tap where it says start workout, VoiceOver will speak a little bit once the instructions start, but you won't miss too much. It won't be anything too major that will affect your workout too much. So let's go into the app. It is on the home screen, so once I find it, I just double tap to go into the app.
Spotify, Simply Yoga. Double tap to open.
So just double tap.
Selected, Simply Yoga, 20 minutes, button, 1 of 3.
So for the predefined workouts, we have 20 minutes,
40 minutes,
40 minutes,
2 of 3, 60 minutes, button,
and 60
3
minutes.
Of 3.
So 20, 40 and 60, these are all pre-made workouts. By default, it is level 1. So next to the 60 minutes, if we swipe right one more time.
Selected. 1, button, 1 of 3.
So we have the 1 and the 2.
2, button,
like I said,
2 of 3.
All I'm doing, as soon as I go into the app, I'm just swiping to the right. That's all I'm doing. I'm not doing anything else in particular right now. So the 1 and the 2 are your two difficulty levels of the pre-made workouts. And then next to that one, because we're in the paid version, we have
hammer and pick, button, 3 of 3.
Now, they could have named that a little bit better, but once you get your head around it, it is actually the option to make your own workouts. Also, if you've already made a workout yourself, a customised one, that is where you'd go. You'd double tap and you select the one that you've created already, or if you haven't created one, you would select the create new workout option, and you would select your poses from there. Next to that, if we swipe right one more time.
Start workout button pad. Button.
So we've selected our workout, and now we will just double tap this button. We also have
colon equals button.
Now once we start our workout, this is where you would double tap to see how far you're into it and what pose you're doing. It would also show at the bottom of the screen, so it just depends what you want to do really, what you find more comfortable doing. Next to that we have
more apps. Button.
This is actually the more apps button, so any other apps which have been done by that developer, they would be in that section. And we also have
info button.
We have info, which is just telling you about the app, so if you double tap that, you will read a little bit about it.
Gear button.
So gear is actually the settings for the app, so it's where you can customise the app to suit your needs and put in some details so it's more personalised to you. So, I'll demonstrate a quick workout just so you can hear how clear those audio instructions are. Like I said, VoiceOver will speak a little bit once I press the Start Workout button. So once I find it, I'll double tap it. But it will speak for too long. You will hear it.
Info, more colon, start workout button pad, button.
So a double tap.
Start workout button pad, dimmed, button.
This is a basic standing pose. It is a place to start from and return to. Stand with feet together. Feel your abdominals pull in tight and relax your shoulders down and back. Close your eyes and gently rock forward to the toes and back into the heels, coming to rest in the space between. Softly open your eyes and gaze forward. Feel the length in the spine. Keep the arms relaxed down by the sides of your body. Press down firmly through the feet, bringing energy to your legs. Feel calm and grounded as you breathe deeply in this tall, quiet pose.
Back pause pad.
So I've just paused it so you could hear those instructions. Like I said, they are really, really good. Like I said, I really like this app. I don't think there's another app like this, especially for yoga, because a lot of them, you have to look at the screen and you have to rely on the pictures of, you might have little like stick men showing you the poses, which is not really accessible for people like myself who have no vision, and anyone else out there who is not really able to see the screen that well. So like I said, I really like this app. The $4.99 version is really, really worth it. It is absolutely amazing. And I don't really purchase that many apps, but this one is one where I didn't really hesitate because I knew that it would be quite good. If you're not ready to make the purchase just yet, you can always get the free version. Like I said, it is on the App Store, so if you just search for Simply Yoga, it will come up. and you will get the two versions, the free version and the paid version. So you can always start off with the free version, get yourself familiarised with that, and then once you're used to that and you get fed up with all the workouts that are already in there because they're just that boring, you can get the free version, the paid version, and make your own workouts or try some slightly harder workouts, but it is really worth it. You do have the ocean sound in the background while the instructions are talking, but you can also turn that off, so if you just want instructions, that's fine. I personally quite like that because it is just a little bit more fun rather than just listening to a voice all the time. You know, you have the sound of the ocean, it just makes time go a little bit faster. So yeah, if you want to get yourself into yoga and get yourself a little bit more active and more flexible, then go for this app. I really hope you find this useful.
Thanks to Claire there, and you can listen to more tech news on Tech Talk Tuesdays at 1 p.m. on RNIB Connect Radio. It's also on a podcast. You can check out Tech Talk episodes and features on Audioboom and iTunes.
Join RNIB Connect and become part of a wider and stronger community led by blind and partially sighted people. Membership is free, and it's the best way to keep in touch with things that are of interest and help to you. You'll receive Connect magazine, our membership publication, in your chosen format, as well as having the chance to be amongst thousands of like-minded, blind and partially sighted people, friends, families and supporters. You'll also be able to take part in and organise social activities in your area, campaign for change and improve the lives of people with little or no sight, and get help from our dedicated RNIB Connect support team. It couldn't be easier to join RNIB Connect. Simply complete the online form at rnib.org.uk or join over the phone by calling 0303 1234 555.
Do you get stuck when it comes to technology? Don't worry. Help is at hand with RNIB's Technology Support Squad. We can give you advice over the phone or visit you at home to help you master your technology. Help is at hand. From setting up a mobile phone and getting the most out of it, to using the accessibility features on your PC. Or maybe you need help with your Daisy talking book player. You can email technologysquad@rnib.org.uk and we'll get right back to you. Or call our helpline on 0303 123 9999. That's 0303 123 9999. Get the most out of your technology with RNIB's Technology Support Squad.
The Weekly Connect.
The Weekly Connect.
On RNIB Connect Radio.
This is The Weekly Connect. Good to have your company. Now let's have a look at what's happening this week at RNIB. This week at RNIB, the charity has been spelling out the benefits of registration for blind and partially sighted people throughout the UK. Being registered as blind or partially sighted follows on from specialist eye examinations, and Poonam Patel from the RNIB says an official registration can help people in so many ways.
So registration simply means being on your local social services register of people who are either severely sight impaired or sight impaired. Registration is voluntary and it's completely confidential, and it's a way of letting your local social services know that you need help and support. So each local authority will keep a register of severely sight impaired or sight impaired people living in the area. And knowing how many sight impaired or severely sight impaired people are living in the local area, it helps the local council to plan and provide the best services it can for those people.
Now you can choose to register upon first diagnosis of your vision problems, or you may decide to wait until a later time. Poonam says there are a number of significant benefits available that may make life a little easier as people begin to cope with the lack of vision.
Firstly, it can enable you to claim a wide range of concessions. So things like half-price TV licence, help with NHS costs, help with your local council tax bill and tax allowances, leisure discounts and help with public transport. Exactly which concessions you're entitled to depends on whether you're registered as severely sight impaired or sight impaired, so there are differences between the two. Although being registered doesn't automatically entitle you to any particular welfare benefits, it can make it easier for you to claim some of them. So your registration confirms your sight loss and helps as evidence when you're making your claim.
Also this week at RNIB, the charity has launched a search for eye care professionals around the UK who have made a difference to the lives of their patients. They are once again hosting the annual Vision Pioneer Awards for 2017, which celebrate the work performed daily throughout the country. Lorna Forbes from RNIB says they really must recognise the efforts being made.
It's a great opportunity to really reward and highlight all of the great work that goes on by sight loss professionals in the sector. And it was so well received that we've decided that we're going to run it again this year. So that there's lots of people out there going about their daily jobs, supporting people with sight loss and making a real impact on their lives and the experience that they have with sight loss. And we just think that these awards are a really great platform to shine a spotlight on the fantastic work that they do.
And Lorna says anyone wanting to nominate or get involved has got a few days left to do so.
The nominations are actually open now. They're open until the 2nd of October. So what we really want to do is get people nominating anybody that they think is eligible for one of these awards. We really want to hear from our sight loss community about a sight loss professional that's had a significant impact on their or a family member's sight loss experience.
You can get more information from RNIB's website, rnib.org.uk, or enter the phrase Vision Pioneer Awards into your favourite search engine. And that's this week at RNIB.
RNIB in your pocket. Your accessible local newsagent and library, delivered to your pocket. Reading can make a world of difference to your enjoyment of life, which is why we're excited to launch RNIB in your pocket. Designed to make reading the latest newspapers, magazines and books easier, it comes with a subscription to RNIB Newsagent and access to Talking Books, giving you an unbeatable reading package at just £20 per month. With voice control, In Your Pocket is easy to use, fuss-free and great for on the go. No more waiting for the postman, just say, "Read me The Guardian," and In Your Pocket will oblige. RNIB Newsagent provides daily, weekly and monthly newspapers and magazines. And Talking Books provides you with access to over 25,000 books, all of which can be accessed via In Your Pocket with one voice command. To find out more or register for RNIB In Your Pocket, please call our helpline on 0303 123 9999 or email us at helpline@rnib.org.uk.
RNIB. Supporting people with sight loss.
The RNIB Newsagent service, which delivers the latest news, magazines and stories in a range of accessible formats to people with sight loss, is now free for under-16s. Reading can make the world of difference, and it's vital that all blind and partially sighted children can access the same content as their sighted peers in a fun and creative way. Current titles in the RNIB Newsagent service include BBC Horrible Histories, First News, Aquila, National Geographic and RNIB Blast Off. Formats include audio CD or USB, email or Braille. To register for RNIB Newsagent, please call our helpline on 0303 123 9999 or email us at helpline@rnib.org.uk.
Get all the latest news and more for people with sight loss by connecting with RNIB on Facebook and Twitter. Support us on social media for all sorts of extras. And it's a great way of networking with like-minded people. Search for RNIB on Facebook and follow us now on @RNIB. Follow us and find out more about the UK's leading sight loss charity and feel part of the RNIB family.
The Weekly Connect.
The Weekly Connect.
On RNIB Connect Radio.
Now back to our interview with John Mitchell this week. John is a musician, artist and adventurer who spoke to Joe Barclay about his life since losing his sight. Here's part two of their conversation.
So you are very musically talented then. It sounds like I used to play the guitar, John, and I used to go busking. But like you, I always wanted to be in a band but never quite got there. So who knows, maybe we could get together and start our own band, raise some more money for RNIB. But you were talking about work there. And obviously, you know, you had a fantastic job. You know, you were working in television. You were working for Ulster Television. Tell us a bit about that. It must have been really disappointing, actually, to have to give up a job that you really loved doing.
Yes, it was. I mean, it was sort of fairly hectic at times because I was working on the commercials side. So when program schedules came out, we'd work out what commercial breaks went into what programs and for how long, and then nearer the time, making sure they were all filled up with the right commercials and ready to go. And obviously, quite a bit of the time, things would go wrong at the last minute and a commercial would have to be pulled or replaced. So you never knew quite what was going to happen from one day to the next. So you got plenty of variety. It was sad to leave. I mean, the department that I was dealing with was having to move from London to Belfast. So I actually spent about 4 or 5 months in Belfast getting them all trained up over there to take over.
And did they not have the assistive technology in those days that they do now that would have enabled you to stay on at work? Or had you just had enough at that point? Was there just too much to deal with in terms of trying to forge a new life for yourself?
Well, it would have meant moving over to Belfast anyway, sort of living just outside London. That would have been a bit of a wrench at the time. I don't think they had quite the same sort of technology available. I mean, certainly the computers we were using, I mean, it was purely just, you know, green letters on a screen. There was no colour or anything like that then. I was actually around when we first started to use computers to deal with the commercials side. The technology had moved on a little bit, but it was, you know, big mainframe computers. We hadn't quite got to the PCs, and certainly hadn't got to things like emailing and internet or all that sort of thing by the time I left.
Sure. I mean, when you consider how much technology has come on, I mean, it's come on leaps and bounds in the last 21 years that I've been blind. You know, I remember the first JAWS I got, the first laptop I got with the external synthesizer. It was a Juno and I had to use DOS, and it was, you know, it was very primitive in those days, and yet it seemed all singing, all dancing. Do you think if you had lost your sight now and you had been working, you would have been able to stay on at your job, provided it hadn't moved over to Belfast, obviously?
I think it's quite possible, yes. I mean, technology, as you say, has just moved on in leaps and bounds over the past few years. And I'm sure in the future it will be even easier.
So tell me about when you first approached RNIB then, and the kind of help and support that RNIB have given you. Because when I first lost my sight, I was living abroad. I was very discouraged by the blind organisations over there. And actually, I was terrified at, you know, just what was not on offer for me and how little help there was for blind people at that time in this particular country. Now, I know things have come on leaps and bounds since then, but coming to Scotland to live here in the UK, I wanted to kind of shy away from any blind organisations. And it was actually RNIB that found me through a kind of series of coincidences. And my goodness, what a difference, and how they have managed to change my life and support me. Did you feel the same?
Yes. I mean, where I used to work up in London was Baker Street, and at the time RNIB were in Great Portland Street, which was literally 10 minutes walk down the road. They were very convenient as far as I was concerned then. Mainly, I got involved with them after I'd stopped work. Again, a lot during when I was doing the climbing, because they were helping a lot on the publicity. And through that, I got involved with helping them out with fundraising events and things like that. And also in Surrey, we had a charity who were at the time called Surrey Voluntary Association for the Blind. And they used a lot of the RNIB equipment. And they were literally, well, still are, just round the corner from me at home. I can get, you know, any RNIB equipment I need through them. I mean, they're now called Sight for Surrey. They stock the RNIB equipment as well as other stuff. It's very easy to get hold of the kit I need.
That's fantastic. And what kind of kit do you need these days?
Not an awful lot, to be perfectly honest. The bump-ons and high marks I find very useful, just for even things like the latest synthesizers. The current trend is, rather than having nice clear markings on all the little knobs, they just sort of have an indented line, which of course is very difficult to feel and see. So I sort of put high marks on all of those so I can see where my settings are. Obviously, long cane, I get through a fair number of tips during the year, so I'm often popping round to get a new one. generally it's sort of the smaller stuff at the moment that I tend to use.
And of course, you are an artist as well. I mean, honestly, your list of achievements are never ending. And I know that you got involved with RNIB and the Legacy team with their calendars that they produce.
That's
now,
right.
Tell us a bit about that and your artwork. How do you go about painting when you can't see?
Well, because I've got tunnel vision, I can see a little bit of the painting at a time. So you get used to working in small areas. And I try to avoid buildings if possible because they're straight lines and I'm not very good at them.
Well, unless you're doing the Leaning Tower of Pisa, you might be all right.
Yes, that would be all right. I mean, again, things like, you know, if you're painting a seascape and you obviously need the sea horizon to be level, otherwise it looks as if it's trying to drain out of the picture. So what I do is I measure up each side of the canvas and then put a piece of masking tape across so I know that it's level.
Oh yes, I think there's a lot of things when you lose your sight that, you know, you're able to kind of make little adaptations and things that just kind of suit you and help you out personally. So that's wonderful. It really, really is. Now, we spoke there about RNIB and their legacy team. And obviously, you know, RNIB are always looking for people to help and support the charity in terms of legacies. And it's so important that, you know, we get that message out there because there's so many people that are losing their sight or have lost their sight that do need help and support. And it's obvious that the charities like RNIB are there to provide people with confidence and the help that they need. Tell us a bit about your legacy. You very kindly decided to leave a legacy to RNIB in your will. Why is that?
I think it's important. I mean, a lot of people aren't in sort of a similar situation to us where we're carrying on with life quite happily and coping with our problems. There are so many people that seem to be either stuck indoors or can't get out, don't have people that can help them to get out and about. So I think it's important that the help is there for them. And obviously the RNIB is the main charity for that in the UK.
It is indeed. And, you know, thanks to people like you, people like myself and, you know, many other blind people are able to carry on with our lives and get that help and support. John, you're such a talented man. You really, really are. And it's been incredible talking to you. It really has. Thank you so much for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio today. And if anybody does want to see your work or what you're up to, do you have a website?
I don't at the moment. It's one of those things I keep meaning to get round to, but I spend the time doing the music and the painting rather than the website. So I will get round to it one day, I hope.
Oh, but, you better.
But anybody who happens to be in the Leatherhead area, I exhibit with the Leatherhead Art Club two or three times a year. I've actually got some going into an exhibition in a couple of weeks' time. They can see my stuff there. And I'm hoping to have another solo exhibition at the theatre again in a couple of years.
That would be absolutely amazing. It really would. Well, listen, we'll keep in touch with you, John, for sure, and find out about your progress with that. In the meantime, thank you so much for joining us. And we'll speak to you again here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Lovely. Thank you very much.
Thanks to Joe Buckley there, speaking to John Mitchell. And you can check out more of that interview and lots more on the RNIB Connect Radio podcast. You can find that on Audioboom and iTunes. Finally this week, I don't know about you, but I love a good book, usually a good audiobook in fairness. But being blind doesn't mean you can't enjoy writing a good book. Read On Air presenter Red Sale has been talking to blind author Mark Hardy about his writing career.
Mark Hardy is an author with a backstory. He only took up writing after losing his sight completely in 2002. His first book, Burned and Broken, was snapped up by a major publishing house and has drawn comparisons with other crime writers such as Peter Robinson and Ian Rankin. It's a gritty, gripping police procedural set in the Essex town of Southend-on-Sea, a place where hope seems to have receded with the tide. The follow-up, Truly Evil, is published in August, just in time for the summer holidays. This time, DS Frank Pierce and DC Kat Russell are called up to investigate a body on a beach, and drawn into a terrifying cover-up going back 50 years. Mark Hardy, welcome to Read On Air.
Thank you very much for having me.
Now, I believe you only became a writer when you finally lost all your sight in 2002.
That's right. Before I lost my sight, I was working as a computer consultant, running my own business in the City of London. And then I lost my sight and I started an open university course, which was actually in history. But I found that wasn't very interesting. So I looked around for creative writing courses and I was surprised to find that the Open University did one. So I went on that and I really enjoyed it. And I was getting very good feedback from my tutor. So I thought, hey, I might have a talent for this, or, you know, might be able to go a bit further with it. But I didn't think at that time that I was going to necessarily have anything published. It was just really for my own satisfaction that I was doing it.
I must say, as somebody who is blind and a writer myself, the challenges of actually editing your own work sometimes are quite insuperable. How do you go about writing and editing your work?
I always use a computer. I learnt to touch type, and I use a screen reader. I actually use JAWS at the moment, and I use that via Microsoft Word. The editing process is very tough, so I write a chapter at a time into a Word document, and then if I'm needing to copy or, you know, edit large paragraphs or large chunks of text, I usually copy them into a different document, edit them in there, and then paste them back in. So it'll generally turn out to be quite a messy, a messy way of doing it, and very cumbersome, but it's the best way I've found so far.
And I mean, a bit like Morecambe and Wise, you cannot see the join in your writing. Your writing is very, very fluid. I found myself marvelling at how well it flows. Do you have somebody read it over to you afterwards, a proper human voice rather than the JAWS voice?
I don't have somebody read it back to me as such. No, I listen to it on JAWS. I've got a synthetic voice, not the, you know, the Stephen Hawking type original voice. So I use, I think it's RealSpeak I use at the moment. But I use, so I listen to it back, but I do have a number of readers who read it in the text form and then comment on it. And it goes through various stages to get through to the, you know, the polished product. But not, they don't really read it back to me as such, but I think the JAWS voice is not ideal, but it's quite good. And when it actually comes through to the audio production side of it, right at the end, and you've got a human narrator, I think that really adds to it. That really sort of reinforces to me that I know where I'm going, and I can almost hear the voices, the dialogue.
It certainly shows, and actually, I was going to ask you about your ear for dialogue. It's spot on. I spent a fair amount of time in Southend over the years, and I could imagine myself walking along the seafront and listening to some of those voices pouring out of the nightclub. I think it was Tots in my day, but
I think it may still be there. I'm not sure about that.
But how do you do your visual research? Because many of the passages are very descriptive. Do you just have a very good memory for what you used to be able to see?
I suppose that's part of it. You know, I lost my sight 15 years ago now, but you sort of view everything through a haze of nostalgia. So things that were mundane to you at the time that you could see, you know, puddles and, you know, the mud flats and the grey sky. Now, because you're looking back on them in almost a romantic way, you can sort of conjure that vision back in a very sort of rich way. But I usually go out to a scene that I want to describe with my wife, and I'll stand there and listen to the sounds, get the smells and get the atmosphere of it, and I think that comes quite across in the description. And then it may be an area that I have visited before when I could see, or it may not, but I'll get my wife to describe certain things, and I'll say, you know, what colour is it? What type of colour is it? And what's the texture? And if it, you know, if we're near something that I want to describe, I'll actually go and feel it, much to her embarrassment.
Oh, so there was a palm tree that you went and hugged, rather like your character.
I did actually do that. My wife was quite embarrassed at the time.
So it makes a change to embarrassing your children, I suppose, which is what I normally do.
Oh, I do that as well. And my grandchildren.
Oh, brilliant. And the police procedural aspects are spot on. I know a woman who used to be a detective in a major incident team in London, and I passed her your book, and she said they were absolutely spot on. Are you just very good at your research? Or
I've actually got a powers of police advisor, so I write, you know, I think of the scenario, and I think of it, how would I investigate it as a reasonably intelligent person, and I have a crack at doing it, and then I'll pass it over to Phil and say he was luckily enough an ex-DCI in the major incident team in Essex, so I'll say to him, how would you have gone about investigating this crime? Can you give me any little pointers, little tips, little things that police, you know, might say, their attitudes, how they would speak to each other? I think that's quite an important part of the whole thing as well. So I do have expert advice once I've had a go at trying to write it myself.
Are you a big crime fan anyway? Was that the type of fiction that you felt drawn to write?
I've been asked this before, and yes and no. I sort of alternate between crime fiction and literary fiction, to be honest. But I'll often read a crime fiction book and think, well, you know, the plot was okay, but the characters were a bit shallow, or, you know, there wasn't a lot of depth to anything other than the storyline. And then I'll read maybe a literary fiction book and think, you know, the prose is beautiful, it's, the characterisation is fantastic, but what actually happened at the end of it? You know, nothing's moved on, nothing's resolved. The characters haven't had their journey, you know, for want of a better phrase. So I do sort of alternate between it, but I would say I probably, if anything, I lean more to literary fiction. But to me, a good book is a good book, and usually that's something, a book that's well written, and you can actually tell by reading it that the author's put a lot of time and effort into writing it, and that's all I look for really in a book.
I like the surrealist touches that you certainly brought to Burnt and Broken, and that I'm hoping are going to surface again in Truly Evil. The different way that different people can see the world around them. You and I both know that if you are blind, you see the world in quite a different way to those who are sighted. Did you feel that that was an important element to bring into your books?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Maybe it's treated in a slightly different way in Burned and Broken, but obviously as soon as you lose your sight, your perception of the world is different from other people's, and I think everyone's got their own different view of the world and people. You might meet people and say, oh, well, he was quite nice, and then, you know, whoever we've said, well, I didn't like him, you know, and they'll pick up on something. I didn't like the way he talked, I didn't like his mannerisms, or, you know, he was a bit patronising, or, you know, something like that. So I think that was quite a good driver towards the book. One of the narratives in the book is the detective inspector who gets killed very early on. And one of the premises of the book is that the older male detective and the younger female detective have got very different views of him. And as the book progresses, both of their views change, but as their views change, we get an insight into their characters as well. But on the other side of it, the more surrealist side, I'm very interested in, I don't I don't know what other blind people see, but people have got the idea that, you know, it's darkness, it's blackness. What I actually see is patterns of light all the time and shifting light, and it's quite disturbing to me, and it's something that I've struggled to get used to over, you know, 15 years, and I wanted to sort of portray that, and I think the best way to come across that is to do something where the actual person who's involved has got a very different perception of the world. So I thought about one of the characters is on the spectrum of schizophrenia. Mm-hmm. So and schizophrenics see quite different view of the world. They'll see rats, or they'll see, you know, and there was a good program on Horizon recently, and they were talking to a schizophrenic person, and he was on antipsychotic drugs at the time, so he'd already been medicated, but he was talking to his psychiatrist, and the psychiatrist said, what's wrong? And he said, I can see a crab. There's a giant crab sitting next to you, you know, next to the printer. And so that idea of somebody seeing that as an absolute reality when it's something completely different to what other people see was quite interesting to me. And that is obviously viewed through the prism of a different perception of the way you see the world when you do become blind.
Yeah, absolutely. I sometimes feel that I'm sitting in one of those 1960s drug films with the flashing lights and the sort of bending colours. It's it is quite disturbing. And I thought, you know, the way you captured how the schizophrenic character is haunted by shapes that she can't interpret, or figures that seem to come out of the mirror, it was spot on. Are you a keen audiobook user then?
Yes, I listen to. I've always got a book on the go, and it's probably where I get my main interests outside of writing is actually reading or listening to music. So yes, I've always got an audiobook on the go, and I've probably got one ready to go after that as well.
I find it one of the few compensations of being blind is that actually, just like in childhood, somebody's reading to me nowadays. And certainly the audiobook version of Burned and Broken is very powerfully read. You must have been pleased to have heard it.
I was absolutely delighted when I listened to it. And actually, there was a very long process to go about to get the reader that we decided on at the end. Once again, Little Brown Sphere were very supportive in that, and we actually spoke about the narrator for the audio book in the very first meeting that I had with them. But it was a very long process because I had a very particular tone of voice in mind. I wanted him to be, having listened to so many audio books, I wanted a particular delivery, you know, not as if somebody's reading a book to me, but as if they're actually there, they're telling you the story, or, you know, in a way they're acting out the story for you. So it's almost, they're narrating a book, but it's dramatised as well. So, and I wanted a very specific tone and atmosphere, which I described to them as sort of like a film noir voiceover, but done in a London accent. So I didn't sound too much of a challenge. And they came up with quite a lot of different people, and I was saying to them, no, he's too posh, no, he's too, he reads, that sounds like a book, no, he's not, he's too dramatic, he's not dramatic enough, and, you know, I was getting a lot of emails back saying, no, don't apologise, we're glad that you're so engaged with the process, and we're always up for a challenge, and all this sort of thing. I think they really were just saying to me, you're a pain in the backside, so...
Well, it came good in the end. Rupert Holiday Evans really nails it, doesn't he?
He does. I think I was absolutely delighted when I heard the audio, and I've just actually heard the audio for Truly Evil, and that is as good, if not better.
That's him again, is it?
It is him, yeah. If the series continues, then Rupert will continue to narrate it for me.
Truly Evil, which is being published, I believe, in August, in time for the summer holidays.
As far as I know, yes, it's scheduled for the 10th of August in audio, and once again in braille and large print, I hope.
Which is fantastic to know that it's being simultaneously published so that blind and sighted readers can have the benefit of reading it at the same time.
Yeah, it's great. I think they're very supportive, Sphere Little Brown, in doing that. So it's very good news for me as well.
Well, the more publishers who follow suit, the better. And I know what my holiday reading is going to be. It's going to be Truly Evil.
Thank you very much.
Well, Mark Hardy, thank you so much for coming on to the programme. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you, and I wish Truly Evil all the very best of luck.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks again, Mark. Truly Evil will be published simultaneously in hardback and as an audiobook on the 10th of August, and in other alternative formats from RNIB. And if you want to read the first book in a series that I expect will join Morse, Rebus and Banks on our TV screens, then Burned and Broken, read by Rupert Holiday Evans, is TB23237. But be warned, it does contain some strong language.
RNIB. Supporting people with sight loss.
The RNIB Helpline is your direct line to the support and advice you need. Whatever your inquiry, the RNIB Helpline team are only a call away with practical and emotional support so you can face the future with confidence. Our friendly, specially trained operators are just a phone call away from 8:45 a.m. and to 5:30 p.m. every weekday. We can help with information on everything you need to know about the RNIB, from eye health, advice on how to volunteer, reading services and loads more, or we can simply offer a listening ear. The RNIB Helpline, here for you on 0303 123 9999. That's 0303 123 9999.
Red Sail talking to Mark Hardy. You can check out more from Red on Read On Air, which is on air Fridays at 1 p.m. on RNIB Connect Radio. It's also available as a podcast on Audioboom and iTunes, just like us here on The Weekly Connect. Check out much more online. Listen to previous episodes and previous features as well, and there are many to get through. Check them all out online, Audioboom and iTunes. Search for The Weekly Connect. And that is it for The Weekly Connect for this week. Remember, if it's Mondays from 1, it's The Weekly Connect. Thanks for listening.